Aquamos and Kedoshim, guys, as a bit of an introduction, you should know that these parts are not the easiest to go through. I mean, especially Aquamos and Kedoshim, but as it goes on, Bahar B'Chukosa, and then as it goes on with these mitzvos, not many of these laws apply to the layman. In other words, I have to mention this, right. This whole shir is L'Aliyas Nishmas Mevavi Chana Bas Rish Karezel, and it should be all for an Aliyas Neshama, all the brachos and everything there. But not many of these laws, of course. Yeah, thank you for reminding me. Not many of these laws apply to the layman. I'm never going to go into the Beis HaMikdash and Yom Kippur. It's not going to happen. I'm never going to be the Kohen Gadol. So the whole first couple Aliyas are already out. It's not going to happen for me, and that's just not there. I, thank God, have no sisters, so that's not a problem. The rest of the Arayos and all the people that I'm not allowed to marry is not really that big of an issue for me, because there's no real desire there, which knocks off a whole Aliyah as well. And many of the laws are just for literally holy people. It's made for the holiest people among all B'nai Yisrael. It starts off with two of the holiest Yidden who ever lived, Nadav and Avihu, doing the craziest thing by going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim at a time when they shouldn't have, and dying because they were too holy, because they got too close to God. That's not a level that normally applies to most people. But there's obviously something they got of it, and there's a reason why it has to be for future generations, not just for the holiest people in Bnei Yisrael. So let's try to understand. Torah spends quite a bit of time delineating and ossering the different arayos, meaning putting them together and understanding which are the people, which people is a person allowed to marry, which people are not allowed to be married. The Ramban says, when he starts off this idea on what the purpose of this for, is that certain relatives were attractive to those people. The relation, and we have to understand something. Relations between a man and a woman, between a husband and a wife, is not something that anyone takes lightly. It shouldn't be done. And I know it's a crazy subject, but it's Torah and we have to learn it. It shouldn't be done giving in to base desires and doing what a person wants to do. We're living in crazy times. We're living in a time where, I don't know if you've heard about it, but people are being flown in to go to New York to go to a huge asif, a huge gathering in a baseball stadium to be able to speak about the issue of looking at different things in the internet that people shouldn't be looking at. It's a crazy concept that what people are willing to do, what we have to do in order to get people's attention. That watching movies, and I'm being honest when I say this, watching movies, even those rated PG, and especially those that are upward of that, is problematic. Because there's always going to be someone that is undressed in some way, shape, or form. There's always going to be women there in more provocative positions, unless everyone is really fat and wearing muumuus, and it's a story about how they get even fatter. I think that's about it. I mean, unless you're going to have a movie about robots and fat people. Somebody there. I did tell somebody that I think that fat people and robots are going to be okay. And I think they told me that Wall-E was okay. So I think you can watch that, and that's about it.
It's about robots.
About robots and really fat people. I think you're okay with that. Says the Kedushas Levi. The main issue is like this. One should always act only with the intent of giving pleasure to Hashem, not his own body. Meaning understanding that there are beast desires, and then understanding that there's more to life than just doing whatever you want to do. The highest level, the level to aspire to, is to always have a Kadosh Baruch Hu in his mind. To marry a woman not only because she's a good person, but because there's a mitzvah. And I know that's a crazy idea. There's a mitzvah to have kids, and that's the reason why you get married, but it's more to it than just that. Lo sikrivu legalos erva means you don't come close to, not just for the stomp, you're together with her because you know that it's the right thing to do, not just because you have a taiva. That's that. It starts off the whole parsha with the words, Ani Hashem, I am God. At the beginning, not at the end, that I am God for this reason, that this is what you should be thinking about the whole time, that I am God, I'm the one who came up with it, that it's all for me. The Radomsker says that the whole idea of Motzi Zera Levatol is the exact same issue of Motzi Zera Letaivaso. And I know that's a crazy concept, because there's such a huge difference between the two of them. But he says they equate the two. And that's what it means by Kemaisa Eretz Mitzrayim Lo Tasu, that you should not act like the people in Egypt used to act. That the Egyptians that we were around, when we were down there, and we were slaves in Mitzrayim, they were so deplorable in their acts and what they did with other people, whether it was women, men, or other anything, that they were willing to do all the most disgusting different natures and all these different things. This is not the right thing for us to get involved with ever. That it's never for us to get involved with. And that's the chat. That's why Esav looked over at Yaakov, when Esav first saw Yaakov and saw his wives and his children, and said, "Mi elolach." Says the Tver Shlomo the Radomsker, Esav looked at Yaakov and said, "This isn't for you. For you to have multiple wives and all these kids, that means you're giving into your base nature. You're giving into your desires. You're just having more kids because you want to be together with your wife. And that's not normal for a big tzaddik like yourself to do? To that he said back, Asher Hanani Elokim, these are the children HaKadosh Baruch Hu granted me. I'm not, the concept in my mind, the idea of what I'm doing, is that I'm doing this for the mitzvah involved with Shem Shamayim. And although that's not possible by anyone in this world, to not have that desire, that taiva, while it's there, at least to know that there's something there, that you, the ultimate level is to do it with Shem Shamayim, to be involved with Shem Shamayim. Says in its is. By Arayos, it starts off with that Ani Hashem, as we said before, because it was unbelievably hard for people to accept it at the time. At the time when the Parsha of Arayos was made, when there were such things that were asur, the people went crazy. They were so used to marrying their nieces, their nephews, their sisters, and all the people, and technically nieces were still mutter, but people that were then asur to them, that were told, you can't marry, they started to fight Moshe Rabbeinu. They said, how can this be? How can it be that you're not allowed to marry your sister? It was so normal for them. That's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu started off and said, it's from me. I'm the one who's getting involved here. And there are two reasons why a person would get involved in a rice. Because number one, there's a tithe, there's a desire to do so. Number two, because you're so used to it because you grew up that way. You lived in a place where that was so normal, where you marry somebody that in other places it would be forbidden for you to marry. That's the idea. Both of them are mentioned over here. That's the Maaseh Eretz Mitzrayim and the Chukos Seim Lo Seilechu. That we're not supposed to act in just ways that are just act the way you've been because you don't want to think about yourself is just the way it's always been before, and I'm just going to continue doing it. It's the concept of you first have to understand that there are things that should be usher, that they don't sound right, and even though you're not used to it, they aren't right. And number two, it's not about just you. It's not about your physical pleasure. It's not just about that. That's the concept of what this parsha is all about, Ani Hashem, even if it doesn't apply to every person in the exact form that the Torah mentions it. And then it says the following. We all know that there are such things called chukim and mishpatim. So chukim are always translated as laws that what? A chok, a law that doesn't. Doesn't have a reason for it. And mishpatim are laws that have reasons for them. So then Tzid mentions that, but then he quotes another Gemara. He quotes a Gemara in Kiddushin, Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph. Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph says, Chukim are midrashos, ways of learning things from the text. Mishpatim are laws that come from those drashos. I'm going to quote you a pasuk that every single person says every single day. We don't realize what you're saying when you say it in Halukas. In the Halukas, you say, Magid Dvarav Liyakov, Chukav Mishpatav Yisrael. You tell over, God tells over His word to Jacob, His laws, Chukim, and his mishpatim to Bnei Yisrael. That's chukim mishpatim. Both laws. And then it says, lo asachin l'chogai, he didn't do so, God didn't do so for all the other nations, u'mishpatim bal yida'um haluka, and he never told them about the mishpatim. So what does that mean? What about the chukim? I mean, if it's going to mention both, you mentioned chukim mishpatim l'Yisrael in the beginning, then you should mention the chukim mishpatim at the end. So what's the difference? Says the Netziv, the Medrash Tanhuma speaks about this, brings down this pasuk, and darshans it out, and he says the following. The idea of diyukim in the Torah is not just owned by us. There are other nations that look at our Torah and they understand through there. Just today, I got a phone call from somebody that asked me a crazy question. Crazy random question. Where does it say, because I know it's a hot topic in places outside of, everywhere, where does it say that Jews are allowed to use contraceptives in the Torah? What does it say in the Torah that you're not allowed, you can stop yourself from having children? Where can you have any type of contraceptive in the Torah? The Torah says, pur revoke. It should be fruitful and multiply. It never says to stop. So where do we know that there's a heter, that there's a permissibility for a person to say no and stop himself at any time? Where does it say in the Torah? And I said to the person, who's asking you? And he said, it was a Catholic. A Catholic Christian. And he asked them that question. He says, where does it say? So of course, that's classic by them. They look at this, or they have the Bible itself, and they look at it and say, what does it say? What does it not say? If it says it, you got to do it. If it doesn't say it, you don't have to do it. But we have another concept. We have something called Torah Sheba'al Peh, which means that aside from the written book that we have, the Chumash itself, we have unbelievable Misoros, which means we have an idea that I got from my Rebbe, he got from his Rebbe, I can bring it back. And I've had it before. I'm number 137. You go back, my Rebbe is Rebbe Lairfield. Rebbe Lairfield from Eretz Yisrael, his Rebbe was Reb Chaim Zimmerman. Chaim Zimmerman's Rebbe was Reb Baruch Ber. Reb Baruch Ber's Rebbe was Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. Reb Chaim Brisker. Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, his Rebbe was the Netziv. The Netziv was going back to Reb Chaim Volozhiner. Reb Chaim Volozhiner goes back to the Gra. And you can go all the way back. Bring yourself all the way back. Back all the way back. You can bring yourself back to the Arizal. You can bring yourself back to the eventually the Rambam. You can bring yourself back all the way through the Tanaim and Amoraim. Bring yourself back to Moshe Rabbeinu. And what Moshe Rabbeinu brought down from Mar Sinai was not just the Torah Shebichtav, the written Torah. there's more to it. There's ideas that behind this Torah, in between the letters, and little things, nuances, little things that you have, there's tons of stuff here that you don't know about, that if you have to read in between lines, you still wouldn't get it without the ideas. Where does it say anywhere that tefillin have to be square, that tefillin are black? Where does it say that have to be made of cow leather over anything else? It doesn't say it anywhere. Where does it say that you fast on Yom Kippur? It doesn't say it anywhere in the Torah, in the written Torah itself. Where does it say that you have to have an esrog on Sukkot? None of these things are written down, but they're known by us, and they're in fact taken for granted by us. That, how can, have you ever heard of a Jew not fasting on Yom Kippur? It's just so well known and so understood that we think it's written down in the Torah, and it's not. It's not at all. None of it is in there. Why? To show us we're different. So I said the idea of contraceptives in the Torah is a pure Mesorah from Moshe Rabbeinu on Har Sinai that he brought down and gave it over, and eventually got translated into contraceptives. That's the concept. Granted, they didn't have it exactly back then, but that's the idea. That's the idea of what it was going into. This is the concept. Chukim are the ways of learning. Mishpatim are the laws that come out from that learning. Chukim were never ever given over to the non-Jews of the world, but in theory, Mishpatim were. Non-Jews of the world don't look at the Torah in the same way we do. They don't make the same types of inferences. They don't understand it the same way we do. So when it says Mishpatim ba yidu'um, it's once we come up with a concept and we delve into the Torah and explain what it's referring to, and we come out with a law, don't just give those laws over to the other nations of the world. Because those laws are meant for us. They're not meant for them. They have their own set of laws. It's given over to them. They got their own seven, the set of seven. Give that to them, and that's for them to know. For us, it's something totally different. It's Chukav u'mishpatav li'Yisrael, and finally, Mishpatav ha'idum ha'luka. That's the concept of what it was, and it's unbelievable. Akilus hager. Oh, and aside from that, we allow them to learn the Torah. You know a riot for that? We allow them to learn the Torah Shavuksav, and we actually have no problem with them taking the Torah Shavuksav. Anybody have a proof for that? Gilgal, when Yeshua brought the Israel all over, he made a rock, a huge rock in Gilgal, and he wrote the Torah in 70 languages on top of that rock. Now what's the purpose of making it in 70 languages? He said any person from any nation that wants to look at the Torah that God gave us, they can look at it. You're allowed to translate it for that nation. For that nation, you were allowed to do. Otherwise, when the 72 Zakenim were put into separate rooms by the Septuagint, how would they be allowed to write the Torah in a language that they weren't commanded to do so? If you're not allowed to do it, you're not allowed to do it. There's no hetzer. You can't just do it. It must be that even though they knew it was not the best thing to do, they were allowed to do it. Allowed to write it, because for them to see the Torah Shebichtav, the written Torah, is mutter. That's perfectly fine. But for them to darshan from it and get laws from it and to take it on for themselves, to take their own Pesach, their own Sukkot, their own Yom Kippur, and to take it for themselves, that is not allowed. It's not about that. That's the concept behind it. The Chassam Sofer was told the following. This segues into our next parsha. Chassam Sofer was told through a dream. You always gotta love it. I don't know what you guys dream about. I try my absolute hardest to be able to think to myself before I go to sleep. I try my hardest to learn before I go to sleep, and then go to sleep and think to myself, I'd love to have a dream that has some sort of Torah content in it. To wake up and be like, yeah, God, and I said, oh, and I just woke up. To be able to have that type of a dream, that's got to be an awesome dream. To wake up with a pasuk on your lips, it happens so rarely and so unbelievable. It would be an unbelievable thing to have, to be even dreaming in Torah. Through a dream, the Chassam Sofer says, I was given a pshat in the Torah. He was told what the word kiddoshim tiyu means. Why does a person have to be holy? Kiddoshim, kadosh, in and of itself, does not really mean holy. I know that's how it's translated. I know that's how it goes. But kadosh does not mean holy. And I'll give the example. The word kadesh means, it's a hard word to say, a male prostitute. So kadesh and kadosh are separated by a vav. A vav does not change the definition of a word. So what does kadosh and kadesh mean? What's the underlying factor that goes by both of them? Same type of concept as chesed. Chesed does not mean kindness. That's a mistake. Chesed is also used as a term for somebody who marries his sister. That does not apply. What does the word kadosh mean? It means separation. To separate from someone and to stay away from everyone else. There is kadosh, to separate from people in a bad way, and that can be used in more of a the prostitution type of term, and that's the kadesh. There's another type of way of separating from people, and that's kadosh. To go a little bit further and to make yourself holy by staying away from other people. God is kadosh, not because he's holy. What does that mean? Of course God is holy. The word doesn't apply to God. He is separate from every other thing that he created in the world. He's beyond separate. He's beyond everything in the world to the point where he is not, it's not even, it's remarkable. He doesn't even compare himself to a malach. He's not like an angel whatsoever. When we do the right thing and we're in the right situation, not now, not in the last 2,000 years, but when that happens, then all of a sudden, God is taking care of us and directly affecting us with everything we do. We walk into the Beis HaMikdash and there's miracles happening all over the place because God has his direct hand taking care of us. But if not, then a malach is involved. An angel is involved. When an angel is involved in those times of Hesterpun where God does not want to be involved and an angel represents God, then it's not good times. It's disgusting that the whole miracle of Purim happened through a king, a non-Jewish king, essentially raping a Jewish woman. And not only just a Jewish woman. A Jewish woman who was married to the Gadol Ador, to the greatest man of the generation of Mordechai. How in the world did the miracle happen to that? There was no other way that God could let the miracle happen than Esther being together with Achashverosh? That just had to happen? But that's the way the world is in Hesterpanim. Is it possible that Entebbe could have happened without somebody dying? Of course Entebbe could have happened without somebody dying. But when things happen through a malach, and not a Kadosh Baruch Hu directly, then there's problems. Then you have to live in an Eretz Yisrael where we have soldiers taking care of the land, and not God directly. Why? Because it's problematic. We're living in a world where malachim are involved, where there's angels involved, and that's, it's disgusting. But it has to happen that way. We don't have a choice. If you
happened then too, when we took Eretz Yisrael in the beginning, or when
by Yeshua,
the lines, soldiers.
It's a very good question. The lines were given in the Midbar when the Jews were in the desert for those 40 years, and they fought. They didn't fight often, but when they fought, they did not lose a single person. Now one man died in battle. Had they gone into Israel directly, they wouldn't have to fight a battle at all. It never would have happened. They would have gone straight in, and they would have been kicked out. Even as they went in, the pasuk tells us there was this hornet that went in front of them that were killing and blinding and castrating the people in front of them, which is unreal. Had they done it immediately with Yeshua, then nobody would have been around, and everybody would have been decimated, would have been destroyed, or they would have left, and everything would have been fine. Because they took their time, and they figured it was their own might, and there were problems, that's why people remained, and that's why there were problems. So in answer to your question, yes, it was a completely different type of battle, a completely different type of war. It was the way Hanukkah ruled. Hanukkah was with the second Beis HaMikdash. Hanukkah, there was no real battle. There wasn't even real guerrilla warfare. Sure, there were people that died, there's no question, because there still was a Hester Panim, it was a Golos. Golos Yavan. So there were still people that died. But it was a different type of battle. Josephus quotes down that an angel was coming down and fighting for them through fire in front of them as they were fighting their battles. It wasn't normal. It wasn't normal. It's just a different type of concept. If you act with holiness, if you do awesome things and you separate yourself from people that you know are not good for you and you bring yourself to a different position, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu acts the same way. God separates himself from the Malachim. He allows himself to run the world and everything happens directly through him, which is unbelievable. Yaakov Kamenetsky is a famous story. I think everybody knows this story. You've heard it at some point. It's one of those stories. He was on a plane. He was on a plane sitting in first class as Rav Yaakov was there. I think he was traveling to Eretz Yisrael, and he was sitting right next to a high-ranking government official in Eretz Yisrael. I don't know if the person was from or if it wasn't from. I have absolutely no idea. As he was sitting there, every couple minutes, one of his sons or his shamish, somebody would come by, and I think it was his grandchild, actually, who was going by each time saying, can I get you anything? Can I get you anything, Zadie? Is everything okay? Every couple minutes, treating him with reverence. And the man turned over to Yaakov Kamenetsky and says, what's your secret? What are you paying them? What are you giving them? So Yaakov Kamenetsky smiles his the classic Rabbi Yaakov smile and said, what do you mean? What do you mean? I don't give my kids anything. I'm a poor man. I really don't have anything. This seat that I have is not from my money. It was given to me from Torah and Masorah for me to travel on their behalf to go to Eretz Yisrael. I'm an old man, so they had me travel in first class. I don't have any money. I don't give my kids anything or my grandkids anything. I really don't have anything. So the man said to him, he said, well, I have grandchildren. They, every time I come by, I give them their present, and they just run away from me. They definitely don't treat me with as much reverence as your kids are treating you or your grandkids are treating you. What's the difference between you and me? So Yaakov Kamenetsky smiled at him and looked at him and said,
you teach your kids the theory of evolution. The theory of evolution is that human beings stemmed from a monkey humanoid creature. And that monkey humanoid creature stemmed from something that was a little bit less nothing. And that came from a single-celled organism that found its way out of the water. That means that the closer you are, the older you are, I should say, and the older the generation is, the closer you are to being a monkey. The further away you are, then the more of a human being you are. So the child is more chashuv than the father. And the child is doubly as chashuv as the grandfather. So he doesn't respect you. He thinks you're a monkey. By me, I teach my kids that we came from the greatest human being of all time, from Adam Rishon. As time went on, we lost that Kedusha. And we became less and less and less. And as you read this Adoros, that I have to stand up for my father, even if my father is not as great in me as me in Torah. I still have to stand up for him, and I still have to treat him with reverence and respect. That must be done. That's a chiyuv, because my father is greater than me, and my grandfather is greater than, much greater than me, and my great-grandfather is even greater than that, and we go all the way back. So of course he stands up for me. He feels I'm the best human being that he's ever seen. That's the difference between me and you. Says Yaakov Kamenetsky, this shot, this idea, is 100% through the Torah itself. In the beginning of Parshas Kedoshim, you're told, Ish imo v'aviv tiro. You have to fear and revere your parents, your father and your mother. And then you got to keep my Shabbos. And Yisham Elokeichem. What's the concept? Yeah, there's the whole thing that you're not allowed, even if your dad tells you not to work on Shabbos, you shouldn't work. I understand that. And that's there. But what's the real pshat behind the pasuk being put together? Here's the pshat. That the only reason why you fear your parents is because you know God rested on the seventh day. God created a world with an unreal human being at the beginning of it, and everything stems from that because he was the perfect human being and we stem from there. It's not evolution necessarily. I don't want to go into the whole can evolution fit with the Torah. I don't care. It's not that. It's the question of how was the world started and what happened after that. It's voracious and it goes on. If you keep my Shabbos, then you know that your parents are greater than you. So you'll fear your parents. Why? Because I have the concept of Shabbos. That's the whole idea.
I don't have that.
They do definitely have it. It's still there.
Kibbutz Avim is not. Rizvan Hashem is not one of their messianic.
You're 100% right that Kibbutz Avim is not. But the only reason why is because they have no chiyuv, because their parents don't have any mitzvos that they teach their child to bring them along. But there's no question that they still have the concept of chesed. Even though in the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, it's not there. As I was once told by my Rebbe of Brazil when he went to Lubbock, Texas, and he met up with a bunch of Noahides, and he taught them all about them, he said that there are really 52 mitzvos. 52 mitzvos that you have to teach non-Jews, and one of them is to respect older people. That is brought up that Hadarta Pnei Zaken still applies by non-Jews. And therefore you have to respect them, even if, I mean, it's more anyone than it is just your parents by them, but it's the concept. But you're right, it really only comes to that.
It comes before 100%.
Yeah, that'll be before anything. That won't be applied by them. No, not at all. That idea, I'm just going to end up with one line. Rabbi Chana Wasserman was very famous, the famous comment of the Chafetz Chaim. Had Darwin ever seen the Chafetz Chaim in person, if he would have seen the Chafetz Chaim's face, he never would have said that we stem from a monkey. He couldn't have said it. Because the Chafetz Chaim could not have come from an animal. It's impossible. He only saw people that were like him. The people that were like him could have stemmed from monkeys. That's possible. So that's why he thought that way. But for macroevolution to happen in that, it's impossible. The Chafetz Chaim could not have stemmed from a monkey humanoid creature, so to speak. That's the concept of what Chana Wasserman said. What an unbelievable idea. I'm going to end off with this. How much time do I have? Not that much. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky asks, what's the mitzvah of Musar? Everybody goes about it, and you think that the mitzvah, there is a mitzvah, you're supposed to give reproof to people that are doing something wrong. But everybody thinks it's like your job, you know, to make sure that God has a good in this world, that people are only doing good things, and it's not about the bad things. You go up to people, you say to them, you're doing something wrong. It's like, God, you've got it for you, God. He can't take care of his own world, so you're taking care of it for him. So you're doing everything, and you're making sure everything's okay, but it's because God needs it to be okay, and you're the messenger, and you're the guy going about it. But it's not. It's not what Musar is. Musar is not supposed to be about God, and here's the proof. If somebody comes up to you and says, I'm going to beat you up if you put on tefillin. Okay, are you now putter from tefillin? Are you? You're not putter from tefillin. You got to put it on, and then get your brass knuckles out. I mean, there's no tour from not doing a mitzvah just because someone's going to beat you up. Or, let's say even better, say the guy's just going to make fun of you. is going to be like, oh, you want to put it on tefillin? Are you now potter from tefillin? I'm embarrassed. I don't want to put it on. Does that potter you from tefillin? Does that exempt you from putting on tefillin? Of course not, right? No, not at all. So why is musr? Why by musr are you potter? You're exempt from doing it if you're embarrassed or if the person is not going to listen to you. Who cares? You have a chiyuv to give musr. What difference does it make if the guy's not going to listen to you? You have an absolute requirement to go ahead and do that. Then what's the difference between the two? It must be that the whole concept of giving musr is not about what God needs. It's not being adam lamakum. It's between you and your friend. And whatever's better for your friend, that's what you do. If you think he'll accept the musr, then give it to him. If not, then don't do it. It's not about you watching and safeguarding God's world and making sure everything happens the right way. That's not true. That's not true at all. You should have to give a musr, even if you're going to embarrass him publicly. If you have to get up on a sound speaker, just a speaker system, and speak it out to the world, or put it on the front page of the New York Times and say, this guy sinned. You should do it. Why? Because embarrassing somebody is a low sase. And giving musr is an ase. And we all know, ase doka lo sase. Any positive commandment uproots and destroys a negative commandment. So why don't we give musr and embarrass the guy and tell the guy off because you did something wrong? Why do we push off musr when we're embarrassed to do it? Why do we push off musr if it's not going to, the guy's not going to listen to me? Who cares? You have a mitzvah to do. Go ahead and do it. It's a pure mitzvah of bein adam lechaveiro. And if you know how to do it, and you know how to give reproof to other people, and you know how to give musr, then you do it. And if you don't know how to do it, then you don't. Because it has the exact opposite effect on the other person. You have to know when to give musr and how to give musr. That's part of the entire mitzvah. If you don't, then you've completely missed the entire concept of what the mitzvah is all about. So it was all over the place. Here's the summary. Number one, we have a parsha called Parshat Arayos. It was impossible for the people to keep, and there were issues involved with it. There are chukim versus mishpatim, the types of laws, and that it really was drushos versus the laws that came from it. Kedusha, with Hashem, we want it to be done with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and not through an angel. We work our way back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with Yaakov Kamenetsky and how we go backward instead of forward and thinking we're better than our parents. And Musar, Bein Adam L'Chavero, as opposed to Bein Adam L'Makom. Have a good Shabbos. Nishmas Chana Rishka. That's razor.